Hey, marketing today has gotten harder. There's so many new platforms. How do you reach the right audience? Fortunately, there's a simple way. LinkedIn can help you speak with the right professionals at the right time. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Duct Tape Marketing Podcast. This is John Jantz, and my guest today is Stephen M.R. Covey. He is a New York Times and number one Wall Street Journal bestselling author of The Speed of Trust, The One Thing That Changes Everything. In fact, he dropped by when that book launched. He is also currently the global practice leader of the Global Speed of Trust Practice, which was an organization formed by the merger of Covey Link with Franklin Covey. So, Stephen, welcome back.
Hey, John, it's great to be back on your show.
So we're going to talk about a book that's trending all of a sudden, that is catching a wave called The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. So if my listeners didn't catch the sarcasm and facetiousness of my voice, it is an amazing book that written by your father, Dr. Stephen Covey, that I suspect there are very few people who have not at least heard of it, but certainly many, many, many tens of thousands, millions, who have actually read the book, and it is quoted often by people and has for years. You're coming up on the 30th anniversary edition. And so I guess the first question I'd love you to address is, you know, what has made this book? Obviously, books come out and they're good and people love them. What's made this so timely?
Yeah.
Or timeless. I'm sorry. Timeless is what I meant to ask.
Yeah. I think why The 7 Habits has had such staying power and has been timeless is because it's based upon foundational principles that apply anywhere and everywhere and anytime and every time. And, you know, principles of proactivity and integrity and fairness and mutual benefit and the like. And even the examples and the illustrations my father used were kind of generic ones versus, you know, very just specific ones about a different company or leader at a different time. They were broader ones. And so it lends itself well to different times, today's times, our world today. We kind of say, we don't mean to overstate this, but it's rather than being old, we think 7 Habits is classic. It's classic. And so it has staying power because it's based upon principles that apply everywhere. I think that's probably the number one reason why it's been so useful. And also, those principles are so practical for every person. So it's not just kind of something for a business or an organization or a marketplace. No, it's 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. So it's each of us starting with ourselves and, you know, and building that sense of clarity for ourselves as well as then how we work with others. So that's probably some reasons why it's so relevant.
So where were you in your life journey when this book was written, when it first came out 30 years ago? Where were you?
Well, you know what? It's an interesting question, John. I had just joined with my father. I'd just gotten out of business school, got my MBA. I'd worked for a few years. I'd been in real estate development, short stint in investment banking. And I joined back up with my father because I knew the book was about to come out. I joined about 6 months before it was launched. And it was launched in 1989. And I knew, though, that this was going to take off because I'd seen my father do it for 10 years, you know, work on this and present it. People just didn't know about it yet in the masses. And I knew that when this book was launched to people, that people would resonate with it because I'd seen it over a 10-year period. And so I joined the company. And so I was fortunately part of the team that helped take this to the leaders and to clients all over the world. And that was very exciting.
So you grew up in it, up with the 10 years prior to the book coming out. I mean, you were at a stage in your life where you were paying attention to what was maybe going on with your father's work. Who were his inspirations? I mean, who were his mentors? You know, where do you feel like his ideas kind of crystallized?
He had many, and he references some of these in the book or in other writings. He always gave credit to people. My father, by the way, always saw himself as a great synthesizer, organizer of ideas. And so he wouldn't claim that these are my ideas. He'd say, no, these are universal ideas, universal principles. I'm just trying to organize them, frame them, make them accessible to people. But I'll give you some examples. He loved Dr. Viktor Frankl.
Oh, right, right.
I actually had built a relationship with Dr. Frankl, who wrote Man's Search for Meaning. He was the Austrian psychiatrist who was in a death camp in Nazi Germany during that time. And he ended up, having these huge breakthroughs of how to view the world in that experience. And he wrote it in his book, Man's Search for Meaning, he was a huge kind of a mentor and influencer on my father. Many, many others in the field of interpersonal communication, Carl Rogers, that's where my father learned the real power in habit 5, which is seek first to understand, then to be understood. And Carl Rogers was a real, pioneer in this field of how empathy is so powerful for people and what it does to them. And there were many, many others who influenced his thinking. And again, to my father, he never claimed credit for the 7 habits, the principles themselves. He always instead would say, my role has been to organize these and sequence these and make them accessible to people.
But many people that influenced him. Yeah, and then I think there are many people that have been able to bring ideas together in a package that actually made them more accessible or useful to the masses. And I think that's the secret probably of why that book took off and why it's longevity. So let's talk about in the 30-year edition.
John, could I just add that here's an interesting metaphor on this very point. Jim Collins, the author who wrote Good to Great, a great business leader, a leadership thinker. He wrote a foreword for the 7 habits that we've been publishing for the last 10 years as part of the book. And in the foreword, he said this. He said, what the user interface was to the computer, getting a browser that could be used to the internet where it became accessible, because the internet had been around since the late 1960s, but it was only accessible to some scientists at high levels. But then when a browser user interface was created, it made it more accessible. He said, that's what 7 habits has done for kind of human effectiveness. These principles have been out there a long time, but what Stephen Covey did with the 7 habits was made them accessible, like a browser, like a user interface that suddenly took what was out there and just made it more tangible and actionable.
Yeah. Great metaphor. So, obviously, your work is not just selling books, but actually all of the stuff that Franklin Covey and Covey Link have done with the planners and with the training and the teaching and all of that. You've surely gained some insights from the interaction and engagement with people using this. What are some of the things that have been some of the most substantial learnings over the last couple of decades?
Well, a couple of things. First, just again, how universal it is, because we're teaching 7 habits in 150 countries around the world and supplying to people everywhere. Second, how these principles are not only apply around 150 countries plus, but different levels of leadership from CEOs of companies, of major Fortune 500 companies, down to school children. Because we actually have the 7 habits being offered within the Leader in Me program, a part of a process to bring leadership principles to schools and to children within schools, that the leader is inside of them. And so from being a CEO of a major company to being a young student in kindergarten, to apply the principle of begin with the end in mind, habit 2, the whole idea of vision, and that you create your future. You envision it. You write it. You become clear of who you are, what you're about. That is just so amazing that it applies at every level. And then we've gotten really practical at taking the habits and coming up with exercises and activities to apply them. Help, like, again, habit 2, begin with the end in mind, helping people develop personal mission statements or value statements, helping them understand the importance of vision and meaning and purpose in their lives, et cetera. And so becoming practical and tangible with this has probably been one of the greatest insights.
Yeah. All right. So this is the hardest question I'm going to ask. I suspect anyway, maybe not. Which one's your favorite habit?
It's a great question. I would say, honestly, I love them all. And I'll give you mine in one moment. I got to say this. My father would be asked this a lot. Well, and he would, at different times, honestly, I heard him say all seven of the seven habits. And it kind of was dependent upon where he was at that moment in time. You know, I definitely have heard him say habit one, be proactive, because that's the foundational habit. I've heard him say habit two is my favorite and the most important, because, you know, you got to have vision, everything around that. Habit seven, sharpen the saw of staying, you know, current and relevant and constantly be improving yourself is so vital. So I've heard him say them all. But for me, I love them all, but I would say this, my favorite is habit five, seek first to understand, then to be understood. And the reason that is maybe my favorite is because it's one I have to work at. And my tendency is to want to be understood first. But I find if I kind of discipline myself and say, hey, let me understand first and really seek to understand, you know, and by the way, understanding is not necessarily meaning agreeing. I may or may not agree. I'm just trying to understand a person. When I do that, then, and when they feel understood finally, suddenly they're far more interested in my viewpoint and what I have to say. My influence has just gone up. So that it's kind of ironic that if I want to have more influence with someone, don't lead out and give them my ideas. Start by understanding what matters to them. Have them feel understood. Then they'll say, thanks for listening to me. What do you think? And then I can have far greater influence with people. So it's both. That's the self-serving part, is that I have more influence. The serving part, where I'm trying to serve other people, is that it's a gift for someone to feel understood, that someone has taken the time to understand them. And right now in our crazy world, we need to have empathy and understanding for each other with all that's going on. And to give that gift to another person is extraordinary.
Did you know there are over 62 million decision makers on LinkedIn? Yeah, and even small and medium-sized businesses are making the most out of LinkedIn ads. They're using LinkedIn to get their voices heard and their messages to resonate with the audience. And it's not just about awareness either. LinkedIn ads are driving traffic and engagement. If you want to check it out, try for yourself. LinkedIn is offering a free $100 LinkedIn ad credit to launch your first campaign. Simply visit linkedin.com/ducttape, DUCTTAPE. That's linkedin.com/ducttape. So there's some terms and conditions that may apply, but I urge you to go check it out for yourself.
Yeah, and I think you could even throw the current sort of political social climate, you know, of such divide. I think a lot of that has come to the idea that we're not, you know, we're not seeking to understand first. I think that's at the root of that.
Huge part of it is kind of like, yeah, we know what you think. Here's what we think, and people don't really feel understood, and we don't have, you know, the habits in front of it and behind it. Habit four, think win-win, that mindset of win-win, mutual benefit. And habit six, the synergy. But see, all of that happens. The synergy happens, the creativity, the collaboration, when we first understand each other. And we understand each other when we're seeking, you know, mutual benefit, win-win. So, you know, it's all connected. And that was part of the strength of the seven habits, is how, you know, habits four, five, and six, think win-win, seek first to understand, then to be understood, and then synergize. They're connected kind of as three habits in one, you know, a whole idea of working well with other people.
So I distinctly remember a moment in the book that, you know, I read probably 30 years ago, and it still sticks with me today. And it was this idea that no one sees the world as it is, that we, you know, see, and I may be misquoting a little bit, but we merely see the world as we see it. And that quite often we misinterpret a situation. I think there's a story about a woman on a bus, you know, that probably happens every day to every single person. You know, even if we don't say anything, we're judging that person or something. You know, we don't understand what that situation really is. And as you know, simple as that idea is, and as obviously as truthful as that idea is, I remember being very struck by, you know, how important that idea was.
Absolutely. Because, you know, the principle is exactly that we don't see the world as it is, but rather as we are. In other words, our head creates the world. And you can see that, you know, to your point earlier, in our political environment, you know, you could have the same actions and behaviors of a certain person or leader. And depending upon where people are coming from, they interpret it differently. They see it through that lens. And so I think the key insight here is if we can become aware that we all are looking at the world through a lens, if we can become aware of that, then we can be we can choose to step back and stand back and maybe take that lens off and look through another lens. And maybe sometimes we have the example of a paradigm shift where suddenly you see the world differently, like my father did on a subway where, you know, he saw these, you know, kids that were rowdy and he kind of like, why don't you be, you know, discipline your kids? And then he learned that the man had just lost his wife.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, right. And what a paradigm shift, instantly saw the world differently.
Right.
And the whole point is that the lens, the paradigm through which we view the world impacts how we feel about it and how we behave towards it. So what if we could work on our paradigms and focus on having a more complete or more accurate paradigm of how we see people? So, you know, a practical example of that is, you know, how we see a fellow worker. You know, do we see him as just, you know, incompetent, untrustworthy? If that's the case, we probably project that out and they probably act accordingly. Maybe we get what we're seeing, even with our own kids sometimes. I saw, you know, we worked with a father and a son, and the dad said, you know, my son just can't trust him. He's, you know, this and that. And he said, look, why did you behave like that? And the son said, well, because dad, that's the way untrustworthy kids behave. You know, he'd labeled them so much, he started to say, hey, I'm an untrustworthy kid. This is how I behave. But change your paradigm that, you know what? My son or my daughter, my coworker is capable of great things. And maybe they're not fully there yet, but they have it inside of them. I see them differently. They're capable of trust. They're capable of value, and they have inherent worth. And suddenly I see them differently and I treat them differently and they respond differently. And I can help create the very thing I'm seeking. So yeah, it's such a powerful principle of how we see the world and how we see other people.
So like is quite often the case, I think, with a methodology, the thing that we put at the end is really the beginning as well. And I think that it so often when something's left to the end, it's the thing that gets the least amount of attention. And I really see a lot of entrepreneurs particularly that leave that sharpen the saw or self-care or whatever we want to call it to the end. When I think that neglecting that aspect of it actually makes it harder to do the others. And I wonder if, you know, especially again, you know, a lot of people are under stress right now. We're recording this in March of 2020. There's a lot of unknown, uncertainty, fear right now, and certainly in the business and just life in general. And I it seems to me like the habit number 7 maybe has jumped to the top.
You know what? As I prepared for this this interview, I said the same thing in my mind. As I said, maybe the thing that would be most helpful in our crazy world, all that's happening, the change, the disruption, the crisis that's hitting us, is how habit 7, sharpen the saw. You know, the whole metaphor, the never be too busy sawing, to take time to sharpen the saw. Because you sharpen that saw, suddenly you're more effective, you're more efficient, you're better at it. And that's taking care of yourself. It is the renewal, body, heart, mind, spirit, the whole person. And so with all this change hitting us, you know, we have to take good care of ourselves, clearly physically because of the risk around us, but also emotionally. And, you know, especially with maybe new social rules being put in place right now and things might change over time. We still need to connect with people. We still have a heart. We have a desire to connect and to belong and to be with people and to care about people. And then to really develop and enhance our mind. Things like, you know, Duct Tape Marketing podcast and other things. They're all about improving, getting better. And right now, in our society with the disruption, there's opportunities like never before, perhaps, to learn, to develop, to grow, learn new skills, new knowledge, new insight, with all that's available in front of us. And then finally, the spiritual, you know, it's not religious. It's the whole idea of just the spirit, a desire for meaning, for purpose, for contribution, and be aware of each other and to try to contribute and add value and be mindful and aware of other people and seek to contribute to our society, to our challenges. So I agree with you that this is, it's always mattered, but because it's not often urgent, it's important, right? Not urgent, yet we sometimes neglect it or ignore it until it becomes urgent. Well, what's happening right now is it's becoming more and more urgent. It's always been important, but maybe now we can learn it for the first time and develop habits and patterns that will serve us well, both now in times of transition and crisis, but also going forward in the changing society, just that could we can develop great patterns that will be very valuable about how we always renew ourselves to stay current, relevant, and you know, good self-care, good renewal, and really all about being able to have a sharp saw to make a difference in the world. So I couldn't agree more.
All right, Stephen, what are people going to find in the latest edition? What new tools, new insights, new content will they find in the new edition?
Well, it's really exciting because, first of all, The 7 Habits in its entirety, as presented by my father, is there. So nothing has changed with how he presented it. Like I said before, it's classic. It's timeless. And in addition to having all of that, at the end of each chapter, we have some additional fresh insights to that, you know, to that particular habit. For example, habit 1, be proactive. My father's work is there in its entirety. And then at the end, there's some fresh insights that my brother, Sean Covey, who wrote The 7 Habits of Highly Effective Teens and also The 7 Habits of Happy Kids. So he's adapted 7 Habits to different audiences. He has a real insight, and he's not taking a teen or a kid insight to it so much as just a, you know, a family insight, the insights that we have that are relevant and fresh today. So you get everything that my father said with some fresh, relevant, additive insights. And you can ignore it if you wanted and just read what my father wrote. But I think readers will really find, and listeners will find, great value to these new, fresh, added insights that are for our times that my brother has added.
Yeah, and it certainly gives people a great reason to pick it up again. So, Stephen, it was so great having you back on the show, and best to you and best of luck with the continued work. And hopefully we'll run into you soon out there on the road.
Thank you so much, John. It's great to be with you again, and I wish you every continued success.